Judy Chicago's series, Power Play, first premiered in 1986. The series of monumental paintings, drawings, cast paper, and bronzes examines the construct of masculinity. For the first time since its premiere, the entire series will be shown again, starting June 29th at the David Richard Gallery in Santa Fe. Chicago will hold a discussion on the exhibit with Jonathan Katz on July 7th. He's the director of the Visual Studies Doctoral Program at State University of New York, Buffalo, and a leading proponent of queer theory. Katz also wrote the essay in the exhibition catalog. Chicago discussed the evolution of power play at her studio in Belen, New Mexico.
Why did you want to explore masculinity?
Well, by the time I started power play, I had been involved for over 15 or 20 years in looking at issues around female identity. And in the early 1980s, in 82, I went to Europe. I'd been there before, but I'd never been to Italy. And even though I'd studied the great Renaissance paintings, I'd never actually seen them. And when I saw them, I was very struck by the fact that if the Renaissance ushered in modern society, it also ushered in our concept of the heroic. And, you know, at that time, there were no gender studies and there was no queer theory. And if you looked in the library for the issue of gender, the only thing that came up was women, as if only women have gender. And I thought that was very interesting, you know, because, of course, men were the norm and women were the gendered sex. And I thought, you know, men have gender too, and I'd really like to look at the way in which the construct of masculinity affects men. And I did it while I was finishing the Birth Project. So I was working both on exactly what it is, the most fundamental thing that makes us women and defines us as women, that is that we can give birth. And simultaneously, as I was finishing the Birth Project, I was exploring the construct of masculinity. And I actually came to Santa Fe to do power play because I was living in Northern California. We had Through the Flower had a big building that was completely taken up by the Birth Project. And, of course, I'd been working collaboratively in both the Dinner Party and the Birth Project, and I wanted to work by myself for power play. And so the woman who was running Through the Flower, then Mary Russ Taylor, had a house in Santa Fe that was sitting empty. She had bought it. She thought she would live there. She hadn't. And she said, well, why don't you go there and paint? So, because I had been thinking I needed to be away. I needed to be by myself. And I wanted to work alone again. And so it's such a typical New Mexico story. First I came for 3 weeks, then I came for 3 months, then I was living here, but my stuff was still in California. I always thought I'd go back to California, but I never did. But anyway, I spent quite a lot of time completely by myself in that studio on Canyon Road. And I started out by working from the male nude. Now, when I was a child, that was not possible. You know, I was classically trained. I went to art classes at the Chicago Art Institute from the time I was five. And I, of course, did figure drawing, a lot of figure drawing. But it was always the female nude. If there were male models, they were always clothed. And it was interesting because Jonathan Katz, who's written the catalog essay for reviewing Power Play, started it by saying Judy Chicago had lousy timing with Power Play. And he was talking about the fact that there was absolutely no context for it when that work came out. And, you know, as I said, there was no gender studies, there was no studies in masculinity, there was no queer theory. And that's all changed. And so I'm really excited about the reviewing of Power Play.
Why did you want to bring it back now? Do you think that it speaks today to society in a way that perhaps people didn't pick up on in the early 80s?
It was actually David Eicholtz, who with his partner Richard Barger owned David Richard Galleries in Santa Fe. It's interesting because since Power Play was first shown, and it hasn't been shown for a long time, it certainly hasn't been shown as a whole at all since 1986. individual works have been shown, but or small drawings have been shown. But when it has been shown, it's gay men who are the most interested in it. It's been very consistent. Now, one of my friends said, well, of course they like it better because it's all about them. I mean, it's about guys. It's not about women. But it is interesting how much they've related to it. David Eichholz talks about, and Jonathan talks about in his essay too, about everybody has understood masculinity as a performance except straight men who perform it. In other words, it's the people who have been oppressed by it who understand it as a performance. And so that may in part explain gay men, because of course gay men feel rejected by or, you know, outside of the construct of heteronormativity. And so, I mean, it was David who wanted to see it, and it was me who wanted Jonathan to write about it. I'd never met him, although I had followed his work, because, you know, he, not only is he the most prominent queer theorist in America, he did this really incredible show called Hide Seek about portraiture in America by gays and lesbians that was at the National Portrait Gallery. It caused such a stir in Washington, and then when it went to Brooklyn Museum, it caused a stir all over again. And, I mean, I've just followed his career, I followed his writing. I'm really thrilled about it, and I'm thrilled about the conversation with him. You know, we're going to meet for the first time. He's also never been to the Southwest. So he's very interested in discovering why so many creative people come here, end up here, because, you know, of course, he's heard about the land of enchantment. He's never been enchanted by it, however. I think one of the things that people are going to be surprised about Power Play is the scale. I mean, the paintings are enormous. Like, the largest painting is 9 feet by 22 feet. So they're really monumental paintings, and I did them in the terms that the heroic was originally cast, that is, in terms of monumentality. I even developed a way of painting that kind of mimics old master paintings, that is, that I painted them on Belgian linen, and I had a special gesso made for the Belgian linen that was transparent so that you could see the linen. And then I underpainted them with sprayed acrylic, and then I overpainted them with oil paint. Now, I don't usually like oil paint, but I wanted to use oil paint because, of course, that I was recasting the heroic in a new way. So I wanted to do it in the terms that the heroic was first presented to us in these monumental paintings. And the other thing that was interesting about doing Power Play had to do with my own fears as I began to work from the male nude. I wanted to think about what emotive meaning the male body could be made to convey. I mean, it's been the female body, you know, throughout most of Western art that has been the vehicle for all kinds of emotions and projections. But at first, I felt exceedingly intimidated. It took me a while to get used to it. And finally, you know, I thought about, like, what Picasso has done with the female body or de Kooning has done with the female body. And I'm like, well, if they could do it, I could do it, you know. But it was interesting because in the first Power Play catalog, which was written by an art historian who just died, an old friend of mine named Paula Harper. She was an expert in suffrage posters. And she brought her knowledge of suffrage posters. It seems a funny segue, right? But she brought her knowledge of suffrage posters to bear on Power Play and said that from her study of suffrage posters, she had realized that women were more willing to present themselves as victims than men as perpetrators. And if you think about a lot of art by women, you can see how that is true. Women do offer themselves up and the female body up as victim over and over again. And it is true that images of men, critical images of men, are very rare in Western art, contemporary art.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is an interview with artist Judy Chicago about her upcoming exhibition, Reviewing Power Play, opening June 29th at the David Richard Gallery in Santa Fe.
You show a lot of the images in the series focusing on men struggling with the feminine within, even trying to kill it.
I think through making art. And so I was able to think a lot about my experiences with men and how men act. And I was able to think my way into an understanding of why they act that way. So, for example, there's a painting called Three Faces of Man. And there are two public faces on the outside images, an angry face and a jocular face. And then in the center, there's a weeping face, the private face. You know, I started thinking about what it would be like to be raised not to be able to cry, what that would do to you, how much despair you would swallow. Internalized despair can easily turn into rage and aggression. For women, it's the opposite. Anger turns into depression because it's so unacceptable for women still to express anger. Where for men, it's the opposite. It's so unacceptable for them to express weakness, vulnerability. So emotion has been projected onto the female. It's the woman who acts out, who expresses, you know, the stalwart man, the strong, silent type. That is a construct that men are as trapped in as women have been trapped in, a comparable construct of femininity and what we're supposed to be. One time I was lecturing about my work and I showed power play images, and it was really interesting. Because it was a woman in the audience who stood up and started yelling at me. How dare you present men like this? You know, how dare you be so angry at men? You know, all the prohibitions that women have internalized were expressed by her. And a man stood up and he said, "She told it like it is. That's how we act." It was a man who recognized the truth in the images and a woman who felt that she had to protect men against my images. Virginia Woolf talked about how women hold up a false mirror to men. That's one of the roles we play. So I was like watching it in the audience being played out, where she was, you know, trying to insist that the mirror I had held up was negative and destructive, and that, you know, it's that same thing about how we have to protect men's egos. I mean, I was raised with that. I mean, yes, I think I started out pissed off. You know, I'd had a lot of really negative experiences with men. I couldn't stand how men acted in the world. I couldn't, you know, like in Rainbow Man, it's a triptych, and in the first image, there's a man offering a rainbow. You know, it's like seductive, attractive. Come here. The second one is beginning to defend himself, and when at a certain point, he gets aggressive because he gets threatened, and then he strikes out. I mean, I had a lot of experiences like that, of men offering intimacy, but then at the point at which intimacy was appropriate, getting angry or pushing me away or rejecting me. I think a lot of women have had that experience, and that's what that painting is about. But as I worked, I mean, after all, I worked on Power Play from 1982 to almost till 1987, I did think my way out of anger and into empathy.
In his essay, Jonathan says something really interesting. In contrast to much art, even feminist art of the 1980s, power play, despite its careful cultivation of multiple forms of ambiguity, seemed almost embarrassingly earnest, declarative, filled with conviction.
I always say power play was the only body of art I ever did that was greeted by silence. You know, which was an unusual experience for me.
Was it just like, not reviewed, or wasn't?
No, it was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. And, you know, I mean, I was sort of by then used to shrieks and of horror, and, you know, but it was silence. And I think his analysis is absolutely accurate. For a long time, well, I have been out of style a lot. I mean, I have. I've been out of fashion, you know. I'm sincere. I was sincere at a time when irony prevailed, like Jonathan said. On the other hand, that's a very superficial reading of the work, as he points out. You know, there he turns the tables and actually argues that there is in power play a lot of sort of post-feminist issues and ideas explored. They just weren't recognized at the time. But of course, that's very common in my work. I mean, look how long it took for The Dinner Party to be understood. It took 25 years. So, I mean, I've sort of gotten used to this lag time between what I do and when it's perceived, you know. And even now, there was this whole initiative in Southern California through the end of 2011 and into 2012 called Pacific Standard Time. This Getty-funded initiative looking at Southern California art from 1945 to 1980, 20 of which years I was there. Well, all that early work of mine had never really been looked at. I mean, I had a whole lot of early work that was brought into daylight. So look how long that is, 40 years. And so, I mean, it was great. So I'm kind of getting used to this now, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah, I'm just glad I'm living long enough to see it. Like in Pacific Standard Time, in one of my shows, because I was in like 9 museum shows and I had 3 solo shows. I mean, it was real. I did all these performances. I mean, I'm reading one review of one of my solo shows in which it says, the guy writes and says, Judy Chicago's work of the 1960s was too radical for the LA art scene. Oh, I'm like, I can't believe I'm reading this. And then I'm reading this catalog essay where this other guy for one of the shows, and this other male critic writes, Judy Chicago subverted masculine minimalism and inflected it with feminine meaning, content, and emotion. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad I lived long enough to read this. But I have to say that Jonathan's essay, I was right about wanting him to look at power play.
What, when you say post-feminist, what do you think of when you hear that?
That term is bandied all around. Yeah. Do I think we live in a post-feminist world? No. It's like, what did Bitch Magazine say? Say it'll be post-feminism when it's post-sexist. And I haven't noticed that happening. No, but I mean, that's a term that has come to be associated with a certain kind of theory. I'm not talking about it translating into the real world. That has definitely not happened. But in terms of theory, you know, I think what it refers to is the point at which early feminist theory morphed into a more complex way of looking at identity through multiple lenses rather than just through gender, you know, through ethnicity and sexual orientation and race, I mean, through a much class, through a much broader lens in order to understand identity and individual experience. I think that's the way in which I was using post-feminist, not that in the way that, you know, like we live in a post-feminist heaven. Oh, yeah, really?
You had one instance between the man and the woman that was fascinating. I mean, is that a common?
Yeah, it actually, it is a series of mine that I would say men have responded to more than women. And I think that's because of the same reason that I felt frightened when I was working from the male nude. We are not accustomed to having power over men. And of course, I don't mean in a negative way. I just mean like in terms of when you're the artist and they're the model, you have the power to render them any way you want. That's unfamiliar. And so I think the idea that I was able to use the male body to critique masculinity, I think for some women it was inconceivable and frightening. And I hope we've moved past that. We'll see, right? I mean, that's what's going to be interesting, to see what kind of responses there'll be. And especially given the fact that Jonathan has contextualized the work in a way that I don't think it's been before, at least we have a idea of the construct of masculinity. I mean, that wasn't even an idea for most people in the early 80s.
Reviewing Power Play by Judy Chicago runs from June 29th through August 11th at the David Richard Gallery in Santa Fe. On Saturday, July 7th, there will be a fundraiser for Chicago's Through the Flower Foundation based in Belen, New Mexico. She will discuss the series with Jonathan Katz, director of the Visual Studies Doctoral Program at State University of New York, Buffalo, and a leading proponent of queer theory. For more information on that event, go to throughtheflower.org. For Women's Focus, I'm Megan Kamerick.